You're listening to the Real Market Tour Podcast. This is episode one. This is Dave Saunders.
And Courtney Engel.
And let's just get into it. How are you doing today?
Pretty well. Snowed in again.
That's right. You know, thing that's been interesting about Washington, D.C. is it's been buried in snow. We've got snow drifts 6 feet tall. People can't park their cars, but all kinds of stuff is being shared through Twitter and Facebook. And so at least you get to share, even though you're all locked up inside. So that's been kind of nice.
Well, that's good.
Oh, yeah. But the point, of course, of this whole podcast is to talk about and share ideas for entrepreneurs and small business owners to help them take their businesses from wherever they currently are and get them online, build your presence, reconnect with your customers who are increasingly online. I mean, gosh, look at Facebook with more users now than there are American citizens. When we look at the demographics, fastest growing group on Facebook are women over 55. So it's pretty clear, I think, to anybody that social media is here because it's connecting people. People are enjoying it. That's where they are. You know, there's often been the misconception. I hear it a lot in the DC area when I talk to different clients and business owners, that they still think that social media is operated only by a bunch of teenagers who are swapping phone numbers. But the interesting thing is that the numbers do not support that in the slightest. Baby boomers are quickly just grabbing onto social media in such an amazing rate. And of course, the reason for it is because it allows us to connect to each other and borders be damned. So it's pretty neat. What do you think, Courtney? There are any businesses safe from the need to be online? Is there? Can you think of any business that can say, "Oh, I don't need to be online"?
No. In fact, here in Amish County, it's pretty well established that most of the businesses in this area that you would think the least likely to have, well, even electric, happen to have Facebook fan pages, websites, Twitter accounts. So I really can't think of a single business style or entity that doesn't need to have some sort of presence on the web.
Wait, so there are Amish people online? How's that work?
Yeah, absolutely. They keep the cell phones and the laptops and computers all out in the barn where the milk is. So
I get confused by the rules. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, their websites are looking pretty sharp, and you could go get lots of furniture from them if you'd like, or watch their commercials on television too.
Yeah, that works. All right. You know, and it is kind of funny though, because I think you know, one thing that is really important, you know, when it comes to the reason why you want to be using social media is not only can you build your presence and get found by people who are literally looking for you online. You know, we're going to talk about a couple different social media sites tonight and, of course, in future episodes. But there are sites right now where I've talked to business owners. I was getting a haircut a couple of months ago, and I had my iPhone, and I was checking in with Foursquare to the barbershop where I was, and then I also started a draft review with Yelp on my iPhone, and the owner of the barbershop asked me what I was doing, and I told him that his barbershop was already in Yelp, and he had no idea what he was talking or what I was talking about, and I even showed him that not only was this little barbershop that had only opened this past summer in Yelp, but he already had 8 reviews from people who had been customers, and he had no idea. I mean, absolutely no idea. And so you want to obviously build your presence so people can find you, but I think it's also really important to recognize that, like it or not, even if you think that you don't want to or don't need to participate in social media, other people are going to put you out there, and they're going to write about you, they're going to talk about you. And so if nothing else, having an understanding of social media allows you to know what other people are talking about to you. And boy, that really came in handy recently. Why don't you tell us a little story, Courtney, there about, I guess it's on CNN's homepage right now. Director and movie maker Kevin Smith from the Clerks movie and Jay and Silent Bob, and he's done some other things. He had a little bit of a run-in with, I don't remember what airline. Well, you tell the story. What happened there?
Kevin Smith was returning actually from Macworld Expo last weekend, and while normally he buys two seats to get onto the plane, this time around he only used one of the seats, and before the plane took off, he was asked by Southwest Airlines to kindly get off the plane. They were unclear as to the exact reasons, and then it was rumored to be because of his weight. He says that he's able to sit in a normal seat without a seatbelt extender and does not spill over into a second seat, therefore does not feel that he was so overweight to need to get off of the plane. So instantly he started twittering, and he twittered up a storm of activity. He sent roughly 100 tweets throughout the course of just a few hours and tagged all of them so that Southwest Airlines would happen to see what was being said. And Southwest refunded him $100 and gave him another ticket, and he rode on Southwest home yet from there. However, the problem still becomes. Here he is making quite a scene in social media to the point where now CNN has him on, all of the top evening magazine style news sites like Access Hollywood and Entertainment Tonight and those things. They're all covering this story that happened just a few days ago. He's getting asked by major news networks to do interviews, and he's declining all of that simply because he says, I'm going to air this on my own podcast channel and give any explanations from my blog and from my Twitter. Meanwhile, Southwest's blog was entirely crashed for at least the better part of a day in the meantime, and Southwest has issued an apology statement. However, that apology statement still doesn't make it exactly clear what their entire logic was to asking him to leave the plane. So he's created quite a scene in social media, and it's becoming a bit of a dilemma because he's got a million followers plus, and now you're finding this corporate entity trying to deal with customer service using social media in multiple ways, such as their blog, their Twitter account, and I'm sure that many other channels will be accessed too. And they're trying to do some good PR relations in that process. But does that necessarily mean that somebody that has that many followers can just bully their way around? Good
Well,
question.
I think the bottom line is, customer gets snubbed, and whether or not he really was, I mean, that's I don't think even the issue, but it's customer gets snubbed, and because of how social media allows people to do exactly what he did, just create a storm out of nothing. And I don't even think you have to have a million followers to generate that kind of buzz when something like that happens. It's getting, I think, a lot easier to get visible on certain kind of contentious issues. But so here's somebody who's, he's snubbed. He talks about it immediately online. He's probably even using Twitter from his iPhone. So he's just, he's rapping on these people. And, if they weren't paying attention to, the online traffic that's, being issued about them from normal everyday folks, they wouldn't have heard about it until it landed on the homepage of CNN, which of course is now updated so fast. It's practically as real time as Google search results these days. So, there's a storm of data going on out there. And yeah, even a big company, like an airline, they've got to be on top of these things. And I think there's other interesting examples that are more positive. You think like Comcast, they've got how many? I know of at least three people that do Twitter for Comcast and do tech support, and all they do is monitor people complaining or talking about Comcast issues on Twitter. And they provide support to them in full public view. And even though, in my personal opinion, Comcast may possibly be operated by Emperor Palpatine from the Star Wars movies, the customer service has definitely raised, I would say a lot of, really amazing value for that company, because people are now, it's forcing people to change their perception of Comcast as a whole, because they're seeing, people who are dedicated, people who are friendly, people who have real personalities. Comcast Bonnie's a fun one. On Twitter, these are people who are actually just being real and helping folks out, and they're doing it online, and it's forcing folks to kind of reshape their maybe global opinion about a particular company. And so now here we are, back with Southwest, and they're scrambling to do it just over one guy, and it's not a surprising thing that it would be this kind of issue, because there are a lot of people who feel, I know personally, at least two or three people who have been, at least by their perception, snubbed by an airline because, they're heavy. And so that's, this is, I think, just going to get more and more of a hot spot, throughout every business, from, some little barber shop that might be getting trashed on. A friend of mine owns a sushi restaurant in Washington, D.C., where he got a couple bad reviews, and he didn't even know about it. I mean, had he even known about it, he would have actually contacted those people directly, addressed the issue directly. I mean, once he figured out what was going on, he was like, "Oh my gosh, I didn't realize," and he just dealt with it. But that was after a couple of months of him not being sure why he was seeing a slowdown in his traffic, in a really busy area of Washington, D.C., where normally this guy's sushi place was packed. So I think this is going to affect businesses more and more, small businesses, big businesses. But that comes back to a really interesting question there for you, Courtney. What do you think? Is there a formula for what you need to do to be online, to deal with social media, not only for managing your presence, but for monitoring things? I mean, is there a 1-2-3 that everybody has to do, or does it vary?
Well, I think that it really varies. If you are, there are some sites that are geared specifically towards certain industries. The real estate industry is notorious for having a lot of sites, social networking type of sites within the realtor community, so they can all find each other's deals and try and sell each other's houses and all of that. Certainly in the restaurant industry, anything that is location awareness or review based. So that'd be like Yelp, Gowalla, Foursquare, Brightkite, those types of places, you really do want to monitor what's going on in there. There are some that just a lot of people should be involved in what's going on in a lot of the places. A lot of people are using, like you said earlier, Facebook. It is, if it were the equivalent of a country, it would be the fourth largest nation in the world. So, yeah, there's a lot of people there. Probably should have a presence for your business there as a page, not as a personal profile. There are some businesses and entities that are business to business oriented and should look at LinkedIn as an option. There's no one tried and true solution that just everybody should follow, but in the process of showing up online, there are some that you should just give a little bit more effort or focus with. If you have video content, YouTube is the place to be. It still reigns over all of the other video sites. But there's no hard and fast rule for how this works. And there are no rules for how to use each of these places. That's constantly changing and evolving, and that's what makes it what's known as Web 2.0. It's this evolving process of there's no simple solution, but some basic guidelines exist, and at least get online and start finding out, Google the name of your business at the very least, and see if you find anything connected to your business. See what people are
Yeah,
saying.
that always helps.
Yeah.
It's always nice to know if somebody's already, saying something bad about you. Actually, a client of mine, a former client, owned a construction company. I get sorry, still does own a construction company, and he also does a lot of nonprofit work. And when you type in his name, the very first thing that came up in Google was a class action lawsuit PDF. And it just happened to have his name in the document. So as I understand it, he wasn't actually like named as a defendant or anything like that. But that was the first thing that was coming up, and it was actually impacting his ability to raise money for charitable events. I mean, he would have these big soirees, and people would normally come, and they'd, you know, write checks out for equine rescue or, you know, Haiti or whatever was, you know, going on, you know, that particular week. And he was seeing his participation in these events just completely drop off, and it was because people were actually Googling his name. And they were finding this result, and he didn't. He's like, I own a construction company. I don't need to care about anything on the internet, and yeah, so he wasn't doing anything to establish anything else about himself being said on the internet. So that was really the only thing that you found for his name was this PDF of a class, and you know that was the title of the document too. You know. Class action lawsuit. And so you know how people are. Nobody's going to wade through a 96-page document to see what it actually says. They're just going to read the title and go, ooh, you must have done something bad. You know, because everybody's so inundated by information anyway, we're not going to read past the headline, and that's just kind of unfortunately the way it is. But, you know, it's, you know, just quick sidebar, though. It really annoys me these days. I don't know why, but it's starting to like really bug me when I see people, especially new businesses, that they start a Facebook account with their business name and they're using a normal, like they're creating a normal Facebook account instead of a Facebook fan page.
Right.
And they're actually creating a personal account. Drives me nuts. I don't know why.
I report them. So I report them yeah. as spam, actually. And I've advised people that I've seen doing this to quickly stop, because Facebook is promising to get rid of people that are doing this, although I'm still waiting on them to take any action at all, but it's technically violating the terms of service, and therefore they could get the account entirely lost.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And, hey, you now have a real solution. You create a Facebook fan page, and bada-bing, you're done. So there's no excuse for it anymore, but, yeah, it bugs the heck out of me.
In fact, there's a quick thought on that. There's actually a way that you can create a fan page without having a personal account. It's pretty well hidden, but for the show notes, I'll find a link to where to go to get that information.
I didn't know you could do that. Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Neat. I learn stuff every day, too. All right, moving on. Let's talk about a site that people should be taking a look at. This is not a new site, although it might be new to some listeners, and that is Yelp, YELP.com. And this is actually one of my favorite sites. It lists all kinds of businesses. I think originally it was really kind of geared around like restaurants and bars and things like that, but these days you can find barbershops in there, churches, all kinds of stuff. Just about any establishment. In fact, all the tire stores, automotive centers in my area are all in Yelp. And basically, anybody can sign onto Yelp and they can write a review. They write their personal review. Now, I have heard of some people getting sued by businesses because of the way they write the reviews, and I think that's kind of one of those important little sidebars of, while I'm not a lawyer, people really need to learn the difference between an opinion and a fact. And if you have an opinion, you can share an opinion, and it's your opinion. But do not try to pretend that it's a fact, because that's usually where people get in trouble and then get sued. But again, I'm not a lawyer. So if you don't know what that means, go talk to somebody who is. But what I think is really cool for any small business is you can go onto Yelp and you can actually, if your business isn't already there, you can create your business. You can actually even claim the business. So like you would create a personal account, you know, Bob Smith, and then you would create your business and you would actually say, I own this business. And there's a process where you can kind of link it so that you can kind of take authority over it. You can also, as a business owner, you can even offer special offers, which is really cool, because if Steelook brings up your business through like the iPhone application or even through the PC, they can actually see, you know, hey, mention that you saw us on Yelp and you get 15% off your order. And in fact, there's a Indian restaurant that I have just discovered because of Yelp in Manassas. I have almost crashed my car every single time I've tried to find them, because they're the turn into their driveway is not great, but their food is awesome, and they have a 15% off special if you just mention that you found them on Yelp. So that's pretty awesome, and so any business can do that. And then of course, you know, as a just a regular Joe, you can write reviews. And you know, I think another cool idea is to, you know, I don't think it's ethical necessarily bribe people into writing good reviews, but ask people to write reviews. In fact, good or bad, I would suggest any business encourage people, write me a review, good or bad, because golly, if you encourage somebody to write a bad review for you, you've got the, you know, the guts and integrity to allow people to complain if they've got a complaint. Well, now you know what they're complaining about. You can go in and address it, and you can, you know, give them a free soda with their next meal or whatever, and show them that you've taken care of the issue. The other cool thing about Yelp for users, the people using the application, not like the business owners, is they've got this new concept of check-in. And let's not go too deep into what check-ins are right now, but it's mainly a thing that the smartphone applications are doing, where basically you can say, "I'm here right now." And so earlier today, when I was at, or yesterday, when I was at Two Amy's Pizza in DC, I checked in to Two Amy's, and so the people who are like my friends on Yelp could actually see that that's where I am. Now, I guess some people are a little creeped out by the whole concept of check-in because they think they can be stalked and all that. But the way I look at it is, hey, somebody wants to come join me for pizza, more the merrier. I mean, that's what's fun about eating out. So I'm cool with that. No big deal.
Or feel free to check in as you're walking out the door is another option.
That's right. Yeah. Sometimes I check in while I'm, you know, I'm driving by. Oh, I meant to go there. No, that's of course
Cheating
cheating. You're not
and
supposed to do that.
illegal. No.
Cheating. I don't know if it's illegal, but it's definitely bad. It's a party foul, at least. If nothing else, we'll call it party foul.
Okay.
But there is also this really cool little thing in the iPhone application, and maybe it works on the Yelp that runs on other smartphones, but I don't really care, so I'll just talk about the iPhone. And it's this feature called Monocle, and it's mostly useless. The only thing that I do with Monocle is I show other people how cool it is, but I've never actually used it for any practical purpose because I don't think it really has one. But
You
you
know,
basically hold up your what?
I'm still
Hold on.
waiting to get that on my phone. I still have the original 3G iPhone, and it's not available on that phone. Have to get one of the newer models. Yeah.
Well, so I'll so imagine how it works.
Oh.
So I hold up the iPhone and it activates the camera, and then it superimposes little tags of restaurants. So as I like rotate, so like if I'm facing north, it'll show me the restaurants that are in the Yelp database that are to the north, and it'll show it like superimposed on whatever the camera is currently seeing. And it is kind of neat. And it's, you know, this whole, you know, whatever augmented reality, and that's the debate for another show as to whether or not that's really any better than real reality. But it is kind of neat. I mean, it's a cool idea. It's really creative. Again, I've never actually used it for any practical purpose, but everybody I show it to is like, "Ooh, that's cool." So yeah, that's worth something. At least they get to remember it that way. So that's Yelp.
Nice.
Moving on.
I actually got a better customer service at a restaurant because I was drafting my Yelp review right as the waiter was bringing me food. He saw what I was doing, and it was at a really great restaurant in Orlando, and the food was absolutely fantastic, and it was, you know, cold and rainy here in South Central PA, and in sunny, bright Orlando, it was amazing weather and amazing salad and good friends, and so I'm sitting outside, and the waiter clearly saw what was on my iPhone that I was explaining to my friends what I was doing, and he stepped his game up in how he treated us s immensely. So I like using Yelp at restaurants. It's a great way to help with what I'm doing, get better service
Well, that's
out of
kind of
it.
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually, using the iPhone, I actually draft a review while I'm there, and then you get back on the web browser, and that's where you can finish and submit the
Right.
review. And so, like right now, I've got just from the past 4 or 5 days, which is, this is kind of a sad thing to admit, but I've got like nearly a dozen drafted Yelp reviews from places that I've been just in the past 4 days. I've been eating out a lot lately.
Apparently.
I'm not complaining, but you know, hey, it's all good. So
Right.
anyway, that's Yelp.
Very cool. Well, in other news, Google Buzz just came out last week, and thus far it's created a lot of mayhem and little else. Google made an announcement. This is somewhat unprecedented. They gave people 2 days' notice, no further, that they were going to have a huge press conference, invite a bunch of people, and announce some big new thing. So, the big new thing that they're announcing, for the most part, is Google Buzz. There are a couple of other features that were announced along with this, but the one stealing the show is Buzz. Buzz is part of the live streaming move, and most people are unfamiliar with what live streaming even means. So, the absolute heart of the tech industry, as far as live streaming goes, was this great site, FriendFeed. FriendFeed got bought out by Facebook and hasn't done a lot lately, which has upset the tech world severely. But the idea here is that you've got websites that are live streaming sites where you collect all of your other online activity into one place. So people can go to just one centralized spot and see what all the activity is about, and they can leave comments on it, and the more comments you get, the more that it becomes the popular thing that others will see. It's similar to actually the Facebook wall when you log in and you have it set to the news feed. Whatever's happening in your network that's got the most comments and feedback gets bumped to the top of the page. Same thing goes on over in Google Buzz. As soon as Google launched it, though, they faced a lot of backlash because the way in which it was opened, it instantaneously followed those that you talked to or emailed with the most often from your Gmail account. So that was a little controversial. They just skipped the beta phase, launched it to the public, and now whoever you're talking to the most is instantly connected to you, whether you actually wanted to follow with them or not. It's led to a lot of backlash. What are your thoughts on it so far, Dave? Have you opened it up much to use it?
Does that include people you chat with over Instant Messenger through Google Talk?
Especially them.
Oh, I'm in trouble now. Okay. Well, all right.
And oh,
Wow.
by the way, initially all of your contacts are visible to everybody else. That was if you opened it up right as soon as you got the doors open on Buzz, they took a couple days to roll it out to people. Especially the people you talk to the most, they are the ones that you get connected to absolutely instantaneously. And that has since
I did
changed.
notice that.
Yeah. They also dug through
Yeah.
all of your social networks that you had hooked up to your Google profile and found some of your connections there and suggested that you be connections in Buzz as well.
I noticed that when I first connected to Buzz, and of course, my very first response was, yippee-ki-yay, something, something. A lot of things, as I understand it, at Google are created by people during what they call their 20% time, which is, as I've read, people at Google are encouraged to just work on side projects. It fosters creativity, and that's all good. And there's been some really cool tools that have kind of come out of Google as a result of just people hanging back and saying, "Hey, what would happen if I did this?" And I think the mystique and the fallacy is the assumption on the public side that just because Google releases something, that it's somehow the new killer app. And Google Buzz is one of those apps where, they do a press release on it. And I'm thinking, who, okay, let's see, what are the essentials of a press release? Who, what, where, when, why, how? And then the most important one that you never really get taught, in journalism school is who cares? And that's the one that I can't seem to answer for Buzz, is I just don't, whatever. Not really a big deal. And it is one of these things that, as I was playing with it, Google Buzz really made me start to kind of ponder the whole issue of, does everything that Google does require so much attention? I mean, It's like built-in link baiting. So I just yeah, I'm underwhelmed. I'll leave it at that.
I actually, there are a couple factors that I absolutely love about Buzz, and there are some things that I detest severely. And until they find a happy middle ground, I'm not going to give it much effort. What I love about it
That's
is.
a strong word.
Exactly. What I absolutely love about it's that the masses were not clear on what live streaming is, and therefore they weren't doing it, and they weren't seeing any benefit to doing it. As far as other aspects of what I love, I'm torn between the fact that everybody that I connect with through Buzz now is listed as some degree of a contact. Meaning, it's cool that they hook it up, and I use Google Reader, this place that you go to read the news, and it's delivered to you rather than you going out to all of the other websites. I get all my news delivered to my Google Reader account. Pretty cool way to do it. But now it's cluttered up with all the people that I'm connected to in Buzz, which means that I actually wanted to follow a couple of people in the tech industry specifically, and not the masses. So I was mostly following people that I really personally knew and tech leaders. And it was probably my most filtered site out of all of my accounts and connections, especially because I've been using this since 2004. And so this is one of my absolute favorite things to do, and it's now getting polluted, in my opinion. So the good part is, if I have them as contacts still tied to my Gmail account somewhere, then if I go scan like Twitter to see who else to follow in Twitter, I can easily connect to all the people from Buzz. That makes it nice in that regard, but I don't want it to automatically pollute my Google Reader account. So it's a little bit of a divide. And it's also just lacking some of the dynamic features to filter and pause. When you have a lot of people that you're connected to, it's just unmanageable to see what's happening. Entirely unmanageable. And I also don't want all this noise coming into my inbox. Every time someone comments on something that I've commented on or likes something I've liked, whether it's my own post or something else, it hits my inbox. It now tells me how many buzzes that I've got, and it tells me more messages in my inbox, and my sent mail is all full of buzz items. And oh, I just wish that weren't tied into my Gmail. If it were another platform
But
and not. Yeah.
what would be cool though is if Google Voice actually integrated your voicemail messages into your inbox. That would be awesome, because
Mine
to me that just
does.
it's all it's all communication. But yeah,
It's in the,
what?
mine does. It's in your settings. We'll save that for
Not on
next
mine.
show.
All right, whatever.
We'll save that one for the next show.
All
But
right.
yeah, so moving on.
So okay, bottom line. Wait, no, wait. Bottom line, small businesses.
Don't
Okay,
bother yet.
whoever.
Don't bother
Okay,
until you
don't
have
bother with Google Buzz. All right.
not at this time. Give it, I don't know. Give it until further notice before you bother at all for any reason.
There we go. Further
Yeah.
notice. Okay, it's in the
Right.
further notice pile.
Right.
Yelp is good. Buzz is whatever. Okay.
Come back to it
Moving
later.
on.
Right. Right. So
Yeah,
did you see, you being a Comcast customer or subscriber and also well known in the branding world, have you seen that Comcast is rebranding themselves as Xfinity?
they I guess they talked to the Sci-Fi Network guys who went and changed Sci-Fi to SYFY, which I still think is Yeah, like people are so, I read the original, or I read one of the press releases or something like that, or from some spokesperson from the Sci-Fi Network, and they said, well, because so many women are now watching science fiction, we decided to rebrand it to make it more friendly. But it's still sci-fi. I mean, so what if the spelling's wrong? I mean, it's ridiculous. And it just kind of it makes me think, if that's what you think is going to blow out your market share. You really need to go back to the whiteboard and take a few more notes, because I think you were probably spending too much time smelling the markers and not enough time thinking. And so, in the same category, I think, is Comcast rolling out. Is this pronounced weird? Is this okay? Xfinity brand to 11 different markets, and so they're going to basically be rebranding their HD channels and fast internet speeds and streaming shows online and stuff like that. And I guess because Comcast needs a kinder and friendlier facade for their brand, they decided that Xfinity is going to be beneficial. Because, of course, we all know that anything with X in the name has got to be cool.
Very
Yeah.
cool.
So I'm sure a committee of about 400 marketing staff came up with that one. They go, well, let's just come up with something and put an X in front of it.
Infinitely cool.
Okay, so yeah, X is for extreme. It's extreme cable, because of course we were all so confused during the whole HD transition thing. As far as I know, everybody's kind of flopped over at this point. We still have the same. I'm not going to go too much into the quality of television these days, but we basically still have the same programs on. We just get to see them in much clearer detail, which I don't know is necessarily a good thing. Maybe we should actually do like the reverse of the HD thing and take it all back to like black and white and static.
Grab
And then,
ears.
perhaps they'll focus on actually giving us good stories instead of trying to like go for, crazy visuals and stuff. Unless there's like a whole, if they've got like a whole channel of like nothing but like Kristen Chenoweth, from, Pushing Daisies. I'd subscribe to that. I'd be okay. But other than that, I'm like, whatever. Comcast rebranding as Xfinity. I'm gonna put that also in the same pile with Buzz. Your mileage may vary. You may be jumping up for joy because this is exactly what you needed in your life. Your life was completely just meaningless until Comcast decided that they needed to change their name to give you a more extreme experience with your cable television and internet experience.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's it. That's enough for
I
that.
don't
I'm
even
done.
have cable. Not even in a cable
Done.
receiving area. Move on.
Yeah.
Right.
Moving on.
Yep. Okay.
What else?
Well, are you reading any great books or blog posts lately? Who are you paying attention to that you would like to recommend?
I like Seth Godin's blog because they're short. And so I can read them because, sometimes my attention span is it doesn't take me much further past the headline into the content. So I do like I really do like Seth Godin, and he's got what now 13 best-selling marketing books, or maybe it's 12, and the 13th just came out. And I don't know if the 13th is a bestseller yet, but. And he runs a blog, and it's a great example too of you don't need a blog registered with your own personal name. Not that I'm saying you shouldn't do that, but he's running it on LiveWire, right?
I think it's movable type or type pad.
I think it's TypePad. Yeah, so he's running it on a public site, and every day or every other day or something like that, he's got a new blog post, and they're really good thoughts. They're nice things that you can chew on, but they're not these gigantic manifesto blog posts that some people have been writing. I love some of these other I follow Mashable, of course, because they've got lots of content that's really good and thought-provoking. But my God, every time I look at Mashable, it's like I'm behind in their blog post by like 5 to a dozen posts. It's just they're producing so much content now that it's impossible to pay attention to some of these things. So I do like Seth Godin just because he's nice and short. And while I'm rambling about attention, I'm still reading the book The Attention Economy, which is a fantastic book. It's really been a big kind of thought provoker, and it's just about the nature of what we're able to attend to. Here we are in this kind of golden age of information. We've kind of put the works of the Library of Alexandria online. We can Google just about anything. We can go to Wikipedia and find questionably factual information about a particular subject, and we can just pop in there, and we can pull up all kinds of data, but it's really tough to actually get any kind of information that tells us, I don't know, what's going on, why we should care, what we want to pay attention to. People just want to live their lives, and it's not like anybody actually aspires to sit down and read the Encyclopedia Britannica from, volume one to the end. It's just there's just too much out there, and so it's really interesting from a marketing standpoint to really get into the attention economy. I don't have it handy here, so I can't look up who the author is. Sorry, but I guess we can always put that in the show notes or something.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that's what I'm reading.
Okay.
How about you?
Well, I just finally finished. Normally, I listen to the audio version of books, but I just finally finished the paper version of Putting the Public Back in Public Relations by Brian Solis. And great book as far as PR world is concerned. Fantastic book in that regards. And he's got a new one coming out soon, too, but called Engage. But in the meantime, this is a really great book to help you sort through the differences between the bottom line ROI numbers that businesses always want. What's the return? What am I getting for all of this social media activity that I'm putting out there? That's great, but sometimes they get so focused on that they forget to actually do the social part where they interact with other people and build know, like, and trust relationships. And so there's, in theory, they should integrate ideally together. And so in Brian's book, he's giving a lot of perspectives as to how you should do some of that integration, what that would actually look like, and how to represent your business yourself without being spammy, without relying on, absolutely blind versions of press releases and expecting somebody to cover your story. So it's a neat way to look at that. And he also gives a lot of really great tips as to what you should be measuring. I actually started at the back of the book, found out the end before the beginning on some of the metrics, how to track your actual ROI information. And he's got just a fantastic breakdown of what you should be measuring to see if your efforts are really working. But then as you progress through the book, it's going through the ideas of how you should do some of that networking and the social aspect of what you're doing while you're on the web. So, really good book. Highly recommend it. Putting the Public Back in Public Relations. And neat site that I came across. This one is being done as a joint partnership of sorts among many people, but some of the most well-known are Chris Brogan, Copy Blogger, which I forget his real first name, and Darren Rose of Pro Blogger. And so you've got three huge blogging giants in the industry right now, all coming together, dealing with this concept called Third Tribe Marketing. So their website is thirdtribemarketing.com. And basically, the story goes that there was a conversation being had between Seth Godin and I think Copy Blogger, something to the effect that, there's the internet marketing crowd, and then there's the people that need to market their business on the web. And which category do you fall in? And the internet marketers are the ones running around with copy doodles, those little handwriting things, and the highlights, and the big red text at the top of the page, and all the little bullet points with the check marks and the buy now button at the bottom. And so that's the internet marketing world. And then you've got the bloggers over here, and they're just naturally out blogging and doing their thing. And so they're not the internet marketers, or so they say. So there's this idea that, well, I don't fit into either of these categories, or maybe I fit into both of these categories, and how is this integrating in the right way? Are the two things really separate or not? And so Third Tribe Marketing, it is a membership subscription type of site, but it's really fascinating just to break down this idea between the giant internet marketers like Frank Kern in one regard, and then Seth Godin's point is that's not the way that I market, and that's not what I'm doing on the internet. I'm doing things an entirely different way. So just kind of a neat way to think through what's really working to get business and traffic at sites. And so it's a great community site. They've got some exclusive podcasts in there, some exclusive blog posts and things like that. But just kind of a fascinating way to challenge your mind to see things from, it's not an either or, but maybe it's an all and some of none type of approach. So just Highly worth checking out at the very least.
Yeah, you know, that's probably worth, you know, an entire episode worth of chatting about this topic, because, you know, I think it's funny that there is the kind of this belief that these are somehow like highly segregated concepts. You know, I'm thinking Bill Glazer, who's internet, or not internet, but a direct marketer that works with author Dan Kennedy and Bill Glazer's out of Baltimore, I think. And here's a guy who owns, you know, a men's clothier. That's kind of where he got his original money. And he's doing, you know, the outlandish direct marketing stuff. You know, he did a direct mailing that looked like it was produced on a diner table mat that, you know, he'd kind of scribbled on. And he's getting awesome responses for these things. And so it's funny to me when I see businesses think that because they're a particular type of business, they need to have a crappy, boring website that does not convert a single visitor into an actual customer, but that it's somehow that's just how it's supposed to be. As far as I'm concerned, if you've got a website and if you do not think about every single page in terms of how it potentially converts a visitor into some next level, get them on your mailing list, get them to buy your stuff, whatever it is, then you're completely wasting every penny you spend on hosting. That would be to me like, you know, spending all this money on a Yellow Pages ad and you know, just having, you know, deliberately bad copy. I mean, most Yellow Pages ads really do suck because people produce ads that just are just complete junk. But to actually go out there and do it on purpose, because you're like, well, we shouldn't try too hard to get customers because that's not the image we want to have. Well, then why are you in business? You know, and just because there's a stylistic difference between somebody like Seth Godin and Frank Kern, I think that to me, they're doing exactly the same thing. Frank Kern has developed trust within his market. He's developed a relationship with his market. And Seth Godin, quoting or paraphrasing him directly from his book Tribes, is doing the same thing in his own particular context. He's just doing it his way. You know, he's being authentic to his particular personality. You know, I've listened to a bunch of interviews with Seth, and he sounds, you know, very relaxed. He sounds very authentic when he talks in the interviews, and comparing that to his book content and his blogs, I'd say he's just being him. And I think that's what it really boils down to, is that instead of just going out there trying to fit the facade that you think people want to see to some imaginary customer scenario, you just want to go out there and put yourself as you are online and develop a relationship with your following. You know, I know there are people who think Frank Kern is a complete moron, and I have actually met one person. I was really kind of flabbergasted, but he actually thinks that Seth Godin doesn't really know all that much about marketing. And I was like, really? I don't get it. But I guess the point is that you're going to have followers and you're going to have detractors. So what? Just, you know, be real, be you, and the result will be that you're going to attract the right people. You're going to attract, if you're being authentic and you're putting yourself out there, then you're going to attract the people who are attracted to the authentic you. Well, that seems like a good thing because those are going to be the customers that you want to work with, as opposed to putting on a facade and behaving in some way that just feels phony to you. Well, then at if you're lucky, you're going to attract people who are attracted to the phony you. Well, then you're going to hate every moment of your life because you're never going to want to meet any of your customers because you've always got to put on the facade. You have to like fake yourself to be around these people. And that's just, how is that good? So, you know, I think that the whole Third Tribe marketing webpage and the content I've looked at so far is just really intriguing. I think there's a great discussion there. But I also think it's funny because I think there's I think there's a world that almost completely overlaps where the differences I would actually call nuance, as opposed to being like some sort of contrast or, well, this is what you do in this market, and this is what you do in this market. And maybe that's just my bias from, the years that I've been studying marketing, and I've always been like a big Dan Kennedy fan. I buy every info product he comes out with, and I've got every single Dan Kennedy book. And one thing that I think he is well established through his inner circle and his own clients and just, his own work over the decades is that it doesn't matter what kind of business you're in. Even when I was the co-founder of a business incubator back in 2000 and 2001, and I guarantee absolutely every single client that came into us, and all an incubator is we had office space, and we had KPMG provide accounting services and things like that. We were basically just helping people, entrepreneurs, come in, and we would just help them get their business to a higher level, because sometimes you just need a team to help support you so that you can get to a point where you've got some critical mass. And so that's all we did. That's incubators. There's no real magic to it. But I guarantee every single candidate for the incubator that we ever spoke to thought that their business was like no other in all of history, and that no marketing concept that had ever been tried before would apply to them. Oh, we can't do direct marketing, or we can't do this or that, and just all these things. None of the rules that appear to apply to every other business that has ever existed since the beginning of human civilization didn't apply to them. And it's like everybody that I've ever encountered in those kind of situations, they've always got those kinds of excuses. Well, that may work for everybody else, but it doesn't work for us. Our business, no, it's not. It isn't. The only thing that's different is just your particular style and how you want to spin on that. And I'll just stop talking by going back to what I said earlier, and I say that's nothing but nuance, and that's all it is.
I think we do have the makings
I'm
of
done.
another episode there.
Yeah.
It's good. All
Anyway.
right. Cool. Well, anything else on your list of items there for today?
Nope, I'm done.
Okay. Well, this has been the first episode of Your Market Flow. I'm Courtney Engel signing off.